So today is July 16th, 2020, and we've got, it looks like, just about three people here in addition to me. And I'll remind everyone that this is an informal sort of conference call. It's not a webinar with material that is going to be presented. The topics are brought up by whoever is on the call, and it's a very informal gathering. I do need to end by 5 minutes of the hour for sure because I have a client coming in right on the hour, or coming into Zoom call right on the hour. So I now do need to get off a few minutes before. So let's see who's here. And it's often fun when you chime in and share any fun, exciting things that are happening in your nutrition counseling process, any cool discoveries. If not, though, you could just begin with any questions or concerns or challenges you have. I know someone named Kathleen got here first, so let's check in with you. What have you got today, if anything?
Yes, hello everyone. My name is Kathleen, and I have an internship coming up. And this is my first conference call, so I'm just being like a sponge. I'm kind of more intending
Okay,
to
cool.
observe.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're joining us, Kathleen. You're about to start an internship, are you?
Yes, I am.
In this very interesting time to be doing anything. And let's find out who else is here. I think there's only one other person here. Who knows? It may be an intern as well. Someone in area code 615.
Hey, my name's Kristen. I'm a
Hi.
dietitian. Hello, how are you? I'm a dietitian with Kroger. So I've been practicing for, I would say, a little over 8 years now as a dietitian. And so I see a lot, especially recently, on telehealth. So most of my stuff is online, which has been fun. And I think some of the challenges I've been facing is going to be more of people, I would say more people concerning with demonizing things like carbs and food groups like the dairy food group and things like that. So it's trying to change their thought process around food's not bad, everything fits, and let's talk
Yeah,
about
the sort
things
of
that you can have.
Well, that's something we could certainly have a discussion about. Did someone else join us?
Yep, hello, someone from Cleveland.
Hi. Hi.
Hey.
Okay, there are only a few people. So, and your name?
I'm
Your
Joyce.
first name? Hi,
Joyce from
Joyce.
Cleveland.
Oh,
Hello.
right. You had sent me an email saying you were going to be joining us, right?
I just, yep.
I'm glad you got my email back. So, and you're a practicing dietitian, are you?
I am. I'm outpatient. Yep.
Okay.
Got it.
So we've got So we've got Joyce, who's an outpatient dietitian, Kristen, who is essentially an outpatient dietitian as well, working for Kroger, and Kathleen, who's an intern, or
Ah,
gonna
great.
about to be an intern. Now, Joyce, is there something particular you wanted to bring up?
So I have a list, but the main one, and so many of these topics relate to all the others, I'm sure, but one of the things I definitely have often is someone who comes and says, well, actually, there are a few things. One is when they come and say, I know what to do. I just need you for motivation or and accountability. So, do you want to talk about mine or do you want to go back to demonizing?
Well, these are both sound like really good topics. How about we see how far we get? Let's talk about the demonizing one, or the good bad thinking is sometimes the way
at
it, right, Kristen? And well, let's just find out what you guys, what your thoughts are, Kristen. So far, what do you do in these situations?
I like to go and start basics, one-on-one carbohydrates and why our body needs them. So mm-hmm. I explain like the wonderful benefits of carbs, and I always like to say I'm one of the biggest carb advocates that you can find out there. So I mm-hmm. sort of want to almost glorify it to show them like, hey, this is not a bad thing, and let's try mm-hmm. small. Like, let's add an extra carbohydrate to breakfast and see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's almost like a challenge to them.
Uh-huh. So you essentially try to persuade them or argue with them that, that it's a good idea.
Yeah, it's like sort of just trying to make a like a good light shine on the carbohydrates.
Right, right. And mm-hmm. and how does that work for you?
It works for the majority of the time. The ones I see that I have a little bit more difficulty with are going to be the people that are like, between 40 and 60 that have done low carb for a lot of time to try to get that weight loss going. But the mm-hmm. younger the people are that didn't read as much low carb information as people that have tried it older, like in the 50s and 60s, I usually get a better mm-hmm. response from people that mm-hmm. haven't tried low carb in the past.
They're sort of more flexible about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see
mm-hmm.
if Joyce has any input, or Kathleen for that matter, though Kathleen hasn't been out there yet. Joyce, do you have any thoughts for Kristen?
Yeah, so this is such a good one. So
comes up a lot.
So many times I often have to go back and say, you know, as an RD, in some ways I may sound like a broken record or an old story, but as a practice, we do this because we have information that proves to us that all these foods are useful to us. So in time, maybe some of these other things that are fads or things that have partial truths or things that you hear in the media will prove themselves out. But at this time, I very much lean back on the things that we know we can trust. And mm-hmm. one of those things is, and then I hopefully can give them a perspective of when you say carbs, I think you're meaning bread. And when I say carbs, I am talking about a huge range of different foods. And mm-hmm. there is a huge range. And so when I talk about it, I want to talk about the quality within the group. And maybe that'll make sense. And if you think mm-hmm. about it, vegetarians mm-hmm. have a very high carbohydrate diet, and most people
right.
that's very healthy,
yeah.
right?
And Joyce, how does that work for you when you take that kind of approach?
So I have a fascinating, interesting population. Oftentimes I can get them, I can see like wheels turning in their brain, and they're willing mm-hmm. to try something because mm-hmm. they're eliminating bread, but not realizing that they're having corn, or they don't realize that, mm-hmm. that, you know, they think they're being so great, or they're not realizing mm-hmm. even fruit or milk isn't, like their yogurt that they thought was so good for them. So usually they get the picture, they get the bigger picture. And
mm-hmm.
it does seem
mm-hmm.
generally work. But I have a significant population of very low literacy and immigrant and Hispanic that everything's just slower, or we may not get that far.
Right. Or they seem to be going for a straightforward message, a good, bad
right.
type of message. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And that certainly is a tendency in the human brain anyway, isn't
yeah.
it, to sort of want a simple answer. Oh, if I just stay away from this, then I'll be healthy, you know.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and then we run into, of course, that people love those foods and just go back to them when they're feeling they need a little comfort or whatever, so that
it's hard to stick to it.
Well, how about I toss something in? I'm hearing that Kristen and Joyce, you're both, of course, taking the view of what do I know scientifically? What was I taught in grad school? Including, you know, what you know from clients that you've worked with, the experience that you've had over the years. You know, you're sort of looking at it from that point of view. And that's all there, and that's all, of course, really good information. If first we look at it from a motivational interviewing point of view, the client seems to have grabbed onto something, right? And there may be some people who, with just a little information from you, will talk about what they've grabbed onto. An awful lot of people won't, though, especially if they feel like they're being argued with. And a classic MI thing to do first is find something to affirm.
Okay.
You really care about your health. You're really trying to do the best you can. Or you've really been reading up, if they seem to have been reading up on things. You know, just finding something, even though in the back of your mind you're going, oh, God, I'm going to have to argue with this person. You know, you know, they have some crazy ideas, you know. See if you can sort of go along with them for a little bit. People are generally more apt to listen in than to what you have to say when you've sort of gone along with them. And then a classic MI thing to do also is to ask permission. After saying something like, oh, you really are wanting to do the best thing you can possibly do for your health. You're really willing to make some changes. I hear that. Then you take a deep breath and then you say, you know, I've got some of the latest information about how carbs fit in that. That'll be really in the long run best for your health. Would you like to hear that? And that's sort of a way of asking them to beg you for the information. Even though, of course, you want to just give it right away, right? You figure you're in a situation. They may even be paying you for the information or not, but you know they're there. So you think, oh, well, of course they want my information. But you know there is a value to getting them to ask you for it, or to say, well, yeah, you mean there's more to it than just bread is bad or whatever the person said, you know, I think another person just joined us. We're in the middle of a conversation about demonizing foods and good, bad. So we'll continue and then we'll check in with you in a bit. So I've just tossed out some of those ideas for little prefaces before getting into your education piece about carbs, for example. Yeah. So Joyce and Kristen, I'm curious your reactions, if any, to that.
No, I really enjoy the part about asking, like sort of bragging on them a little bit, being like, you've done some research, like you're really ready to learn and want to, like, it's sort of like showing them that you are buying in as well, like you're interested and you're wanting them to be their best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're on their side, if you will.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
That.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actionable.
Yeah. I even like the point before, too. And I can't remember her name when she was talking about carbohydrates, where she asked the question of, well, what specifically do you consider bad carbs? So you're on that platform of what is a carbohydrate to you before I start telling you what the carbohydrate means to me.
Exactly, Kristen. And that's an example of what in MI we might call the first elicit. The format in MI about giving advice is first we elicit what the client already knows about the topic and what they want from us. Then we provide the information, and then we follow up to find out what their response is. So, and I've just done that here with you guys, haven't I? I first asked you what you already know about how to handle these situations. Anyway, sorry, I can't help myself doing it. Notice in the first elicit, you could say, oh, so it sounds like you've done a lot of thinking about carbs. Tell me what you already know about the role they play, you know, or whatever, you know. And then that's where you'll hear the maybe some actual true information they may have and some myths that you could specifically educate about, right? Kristen, you're the one who brought up this good, bad, you know, demonizing thing. How are we doing with it?
I think that really sort of sums it up and puts it all in like a little perfect nutshell where it's sort of like mm-hmm. a good flow of asking questions, because that's one thing I am trying to get better at, as doing less talking on appointments and letting the patient do more of the talking, so you can
mm-hmm.
figure out where they're wanting to go and what changes, what current stage of change they're in, so you know where they're wanting to change and what they might change.
Right, right. And when you're giving information or education, make sure it's something they're open to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And this sort of piggybacks, it's a little bit different of a topic, but this helps me too with whenever you have that one patient that asks you, like, well, what do I do? And it's a patient, like a first appointment, and it's one that mm-hmm. has never had nutrition information. You can tell mm-hmm. they need to start with the basics, and you're like, mm-hmm. where do I start with? Do I start with label reading? Do we want to talk about a balanced plate? And it's like
right.
you have all these ideas of where to start, but if you don't ask those correct questions, it's like you can't
right.
figure out where to start.
Yeah, find out where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know where they're at. You know, yeah, and they may be, literally, they don't understand their condition, you know, and you may need to start there,
yeah.
or, you know, whatever. Yeah, getting them to help you figure out where to go. It saves you time, too. Yeah,
for sure.
So
I like this. And so that first elicit, that would be almost, So, you know, in a visit, you've got a period of time and you have to, like,
mm-hmm.
reassess certain things and, you know, you have to recollect some information and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Would this be in the part with, okay, well, welcome back or nice to meet you. Tell me why you've come today. How can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
So would that first set of discussion be something? And then would you kind of, before your education, go to get the assessment information and then go back?
I hear you're sort of asking the question about how do you structure sessions?
Yeah.
Is that essentially what you're saying?
It is because... because, I mean, you could get on tangents with some of these people and you don't end up, you don't collect,
oh, yeah.
collect the information that you have to get for a full assessment or, you know, to satisfy the insurance or to set up whether they get them or not, a list of interventions that you really need to, you know, use to measure
mm-hmm.
your own session.
Yeah. And
so, yeah.
And that's really hard, isn't it? Yeah. Because
yeah.
if you're going to be a really client-centered, you know, effective nutrition counselor, you do want to start where the client is at and say hello and what brought you in and what are you worried about and whatever, and at least hear a few sentences about where they're at. And then you're still going to need a lot of information. I guess I don't
right.
see any problem with telling them that, saying, oh, so I hear what you're saying. You really are worried about what this doctor said about your blood sugar or whatever. Indeed, that's something I can help you with. In order to help you, I need some more information. So
right.
we're going to do that for a little bit. You know, essentially bracket off. I'm about to ask you some closed-end questions. Now, you wouldn't say it that way to them, but, you know, basically warn them that you're going to do a, you know, a 20-question type thing. You know, you're going to have to ask
right.
them a whole lot of questions and, you know, ask their indulgence for that and promise that you're going to get to what they want.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just reading, where was I? I was reading something of yours. Of course. What was I reading? And it said, what was it saying? In a short amount of time,
Where was it? Basically kind of give them the expectation of, we have 15 minutes. I'd like to know, you know, your doctor's asked me to come for this purpose. We have about only 10 or 15 minutes. I'd like to understand your concerns, and then maybe even leave some time for questions at the end. And so then they kind of understand.
Yeah, help set the time boundaries. And and then you asked about the illicit, provide illicit. Ideally, you can do a little one of those little formats almost every time you're giving education. You know, if a new topic comes up, like how to read labels, and you hadn't been talking about that before, it makes sense again to do the, so tell me what you already know about labels.
Yeah, yeah.
And is there something specific you want from me about it? It's going to save you time, for one thing.
Yeah.
Because there may be just the little stuff down at the bottom of the label that they're wondering about. They understand all the stuff at the top, you know, whatever. So you can actually do the illicit, provide illicit sort of a bunch of times during a session.
Okay.
It doesn't have to take a long time.
Now,
I'm aware that Joyce had the concern about when people come in and say, well, I know what I'm supposed to do. I just need motivation and accountability. I want to check in, though, with, there was at least one other person who joined us. Someone in the 928.
Yes, I'm in Arizona. My name's Becky.
Hi, Becky.
Hi. I'm enjoying just listening and learning. I haven't been on a call in quite a while, and I just honestly didn't come with any kind of agenda or question. I wanted just to be reminded of things and to learn.
Sure.
So.
Sure. Okay. Well,
thank you.
That's fine. Sure. let's go. We have only a few people this time on the call, so there's, time to get to everyone if we need to. But anyway, Joyce had this classic kind of concern that comes up. And let's start out with what, particularly Joyce, how do you handle that so far when somebody comes and says that to you? How do you handle it?
Since it sounds reasonably, I shouldn't say closed, or it sounds like a bigger topic, a lot of times I'll collect my assessment information, and then I'll go back and say, okay, tell me what you have done. Tell me what's worked. Tell me what's been difficult. Tell me what, you know, if you know these things, please tell me some of the ideas you have, and we can start there and work from that.
Absolutely. And how does that go?
the response varies. And, usually when they start talking, I usually end up realizing they don't quite know as much as they think they know, or their ideas are, like, wrong, or... Again, because then they go back to the, like, you know, well, I don't eat bread, but sometimes it's hard, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
Or,
yeah.
You know, so, and then that kind of, and then you're like, okay, then it's back to what Kristen said about, like, where do I start?
Right.
So,
if
I get something out of them, if I actually get something reasonable out of them, I try and say to them, you know, oftentimes when something feels big, you know, what my other clients have done is they start small. They pick small things that they know they can do, and they're proud of them, and they keep checking up on them, and then we go from there. So we pick one or two small goals.
Right. And when you share that process that works with some of your clients, I'm presuming at least some pick up on it and go, oh, okay, that might work, and some don't.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing, Joyce, that your brain does this. It'll sort out, you know, you'll sort of say, well, that's it. I don't know enough information here. I need to find out whether they actually do know what to do and know correctly first. And so, yeah, and you feel that out. You ask them, so what is it you're aiming for? What, you know, and if they start saying, well, I know I should put a little less on my plate, or I should, you know, if they say things that seem reasonable, you know, and seem like a good idea, or they, I know I'm supposed to read labels and stay away from as much sodium as I can, or, you know, and you have something to affirm then, don't you? You have something to say, hey, you really got it. You're really well informed.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that MI skill of affirmation gets left out so often. We sort of look at open-ended questioning and reflecting as so much more important, but affirming plays such an important role, even when we can affirm a few little things, even if they seem so obvious to us, you know, we go, yeah, right, of course, low sodium, you know, but when we can affirm them, they're more apt to then feel confident moving forward with other things. Anyway, so your first pass is to sort of check in with the content of what it is they're actually aiming for. And then if it turns out that that part is pretty much, you know, straight, then you go to the process of making the changes. And you begin to suggest some things for them. Yeah.
And a lot of times I won't go even further. Like if they'll say, well, I started to get, you know, I'm trying to get 8 cups of water, but I'm up to 6. I mean, that might be the whole end of my session. Because I'll be like, that's great. I love that idea. How can we set that up as a SMART goal? You know, can we say 8 cups 5 days a week? Do you have a structure to your day? You know, how can you, you know, really perfect that goal for yourself?
Right. So if you two have gotten to the point where you've agreed on a specific behavior, more water, for example, right? If you've agreed on the goal, and then what you're doing is basically smartening up the goal, helping them smarten it up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a thought, Joyce, and I'd be curious to hear what your response to this is, because it may fit your style, it might not. What I might do in that situation is, at the beginning, when somebody has said, I know what to do, but I need motivation and accountability, you do all this exploring, smartening up the goal, giving them ideas, et cetera. And then somewhere toward the end, you'd circle back and say, you came in saying to me that you know what to do, but you're concerned about your confidence that you're going to be able to do it. How's that going right now? Have we done what we needed to here?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm curious how that kind of thing would work for you or not.
Well, I think that's great, and I probably do it, but I didn't realize it. But I
cool.
be more specific. Well, because when you set, I mean, when in my brain, when I set a SMART goal, with, you know, or when I propose the idea of it, that attainable part is a really big deal, and so if they're doing it 4 days a week, 5 to 7 is usually for them quite attainable. And I think they feel good about that, like that leeway, right? Because life happens. So to think that they can reach a goal without being perfect, I think for them a lot of times is is comforting, if that makes sense. It's comforting, it's empowering, it gives them confidence because they're like, oh, I can do that.
Right. And Joyce, what I'm hearing you do is that you work with them on increasing their confidence that the specific behaviors they're working on are going to happen, right? Which is classic motivational interviewing, right? And it sounds like what they're saying to you at the beginning is that I know doing X, Y, or Z is a good idea, and my confidence that it's going to happen is about a one or a two, right?
Right.
You could, if you wanted to, go ahead and scale their confidence just to sort of see what it is. And then by the end, probably if you scaled it, it would be higher. And that's what you're doing. And they've asked you for help with motivation. And that's what you're doing, right? Now, what you're doing is boosting up their motivation, right? Because you can't hand them motivation. You can't, you know, they can't buy it from you, you know. You can just work with them to make their confidence go up that it will happen.
Okay, I didn't realize I was doing all that, but I think that makes sense. Now, the alternative is the person who's silent, which happens all the time also, you know, where they're like, I don't know. Well, I guess that's even another thing. You're like, why are you here today? And they're like, well, I need to lose weight. Okay. You know, well, what have you been thinking? Well, nothing. You know, they have no ideas or whatever. Anyway.
So that's a another category, sort of a, well, we could call it a type of resistance, I guess. Let's check in with the other guys. Is there any input or reactions to what Joyce and I were talking about?
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hello again. Yes, it's Kathleen. So I've only been reading on motivational interviewing on like in books. So. And I've been thinking about what I would do in those situations. What I'm wondering is maybe it's easier said than done, as in perhaps not in front of a patient. I would do ABC that's in line with motivational interviewing. But then when I'm on the spot, perhaps I'm wondering if my writing reflex would kick in automatically.
Kathleen, I think you have, if I'm hearing you right, I'm hearing that you're essentially saying that you're worried that when you get into practice that you'll forget all this very client-centered stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Kathleen, I think you may have noticed what both Kristen and Joyce were, part of what they initially were saying about how they handle these situations is to provide information, to give arguments, et cetera, which is the writing reflex, right? That's the part of us that wants to just tell the person all of our wonderful information that we learned in school, right? Yeah. I can tell Kathleen already that you're going to be a great dietitian, a wonderful nutrition counselor, because you have an awareness of that tendency of the writing reflex, of the, let me just tell this person what to do, as if that'll make them do it, right? is that Joyce's laugh? You have a cute laugh.
Yes.
Any other reactions or anything? Okay, well, let's, Joyce had that that issue of a violent, you know, there are indeed so many ways in which clients just don't give us much. And I'll do the same thing again this time. Joyce, so far, what do you do when you have a client like that?
I return to the writing reflex. No, I. it's a good question. A lot of times I whip out this stinking healthy plate. I mean,
Or sometimes I'll get, then maybe I'll go straight to the assessment and I'll get tricks like, it sounds like you like these kinds of foods. It sounds like you like, you know, you're very busy and you have the need to pick up foods two or three times a week. So sometimes I can get information from that. But they're seriously giving me nothing.
Right, and you're pulling teeth.
So that, oh, yeah.
You feel like you're pulling teeth, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like maybe I could, I've seen other things that talk about, like, providing a menu, you know, where, you know, I'm like, well, it sounds like eating out could be a challenge, or, you know, your beverages could be a challenge, whatever. And then... you know, maybe there's something that kind of, you know, and this is a very personal thing. So, and the best way to approach it is for you to pick the things that sound most interesting or doable for you.
Yeah. And that's an example sort of stepping back a little bit and asking them to choose. And my guess is with some clients, you might get a little engagement, a little hook, you know, and you might get going with something. And, of course, the classic MI way to handle that is to someone who's really pretty silent or you feel like you're pulling teeth is to step way back and roll with it. And that's, and it's the more resistant the person is, the more silent they are, the trickier it is, or the sort of scarier it is for the, for us, for the counselor, because it can mean, you know, putting down your pen and saying, I'm getting the idea you don't want to be here, you know, because if that's what you're sensing, you could say that, not in a mean way, obviously, you know, but in an empathetic kind of way. Like, I'm getting the idea this is it's not an ideal day for you to be here, or you're having a tough day, or, you know, something that sort of tries to come alongside that, you know, you're making a guess probably about what's going on, but it's, you're more apt to get some sort of engagement with them than plowing ahead. Basically.
It ends up, I feel like a lot of times I have truly cognitively lower capability patients overall, where they really are there and they really have no ideas, or they come from a culture. I mean, I've been doing some of the academy stuff too. And they're coming from a culture where they don't include vegetables and fruits at all. I mean, it's just not part of the culture. And they're in atmospheres where no one else does. So it's not like they've seen anything outside of themselves. And so they don't have other ideas. So I'm not sure that it's not like an emotional thing as much as it is really just lack of awareness of all
of what is even possible. And what's a good idea?
Well, it sounds like you're talking about.
Or
even of their own situation, like why, you know, if there are cultures where the weight, I mean, they'll tell me, I don't really want to lose a lot of weight because I like it like this. Like they like to have a, you know, a large bottom, or they, you know, they think that overweight means that they look bulky and strong or something like this. So they don't want to. And it's their culture where some of that is favored and they fatten up the kids and things like that. And they don't get the connection between what their primary care doctor has said to them or sent them to me for and anything else.
Yeah. And so that's an example of a situation where goals and behavior changes that you have in mind for their health don't make any sense to the person. They're exactly. not important to them, right? And in MI, remember, we look at what is important and then how confident they are they can do it. So if it is not important to them to decrease portions and they don't even believe or understand that there's a connection between, I'm going to make up a case, you know, the pain that they're having in their legs and their high blood sugar, you know, if they don't even know the connection, why would they, you know, try to make any changes, right?
Right, exactly.
So unfortunately, then you're probably going to need to ask permission to discuss how they look at their health and the relationship between how they're eating and their health. And then ask permission maybe to provide a little information about the neuropathy and high blood sugar, for example, if that's
okay.
I just took that example, right?
Yeah.
Or the risk of stroke if their blood pressure's up. And that's where, you know, hopefully the doctors did a little educating, but, you know, you're not sure how far they got with them.
Right.
And if the person doesn't believe that making changes is important, moving on to how they're going to do it is useless, right? It's not going right. to get anywhere, you know?
Right.
They have to have some belief that, yeah, this will get me somewhere. This will get something I want, even if what it will get them is seems a little roundabout to you, like
right.
it will get the
right.
doctor off their back or, you know, make their wife happy or, you know, sometimes it's a little roundabout like that.
This is a key point you're making because I have a lot of what I have is like this, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot, unfortunately, a lot of them have been referred to bariatrics. And so I'm counseling them to prepare for a bariatric surgery and they really just don't see it either, which is for me a big red flag because soon their whole digestion will be changed and they will not have quite, you know, they're at risk for other things because they will, you know.
Right.
So I like this. I like this.
Mm-hmm. Reminding yourself to start with importance. And, well, I would hope that the bariatric program that you're associated with does allow you to thoroughly assess someone and say whether you believe that they're not a good candidate because they're not going to be able to figure this out, out how to nourish themselves well enough after surgery. So what's the point, you know?
Right, right. I mean,
that's,
you know.
I got on my soapbox, sorry.
No, thank you for that. Thank you for that affirmation. No. I agree with you. This is good. I mean, this is good. This puts it in perspective because in so many ways, I feel like I have a list of people that cause me stress at work and they come back or they don't come, whatever. But, and then the question is to look at them somewhat individually and then find my approach. And, and there's groups of them, right? So this might cover six or eight of them that I'll see in the next month, and it'll just give me more insight into how to approach them.
Right.
So,
Yeah. And you can experiment. And what do you got to lose? You know, you could try stuff. I hope it doesn't sound like I'm being dismissive of the patients. I don't mean it that way.
No.
But if you feel like you're beating your head against a wall sometimes, why not step back and sort of take a different approach and see what happens, you know?
Yeah. No. I don't think you're being dismissive. I think you're being realistic. And sometimes we take it, there's a fine line between, like, did I do enough, good enough job to make them change or to teach them or for them to understand or to identify their own motivation?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it them? And a lot of times it sounds like there is somewhat of a hard stop or a reflection or a step back and let them come back to me if they're interested.
Right, right. And And if you end the session feeling like we didn't get anywhere, you know, it doesn't feel like they are actually have a goal, a SMART goal or anything, you can document that, you know?
Yeah.
You can say that I'm not very good at the PES wording and all that stuff, but, you know, had something about the client was not ready
for behavior change.
In the, yeah, exactly, you know.
Yeah.
And stated X, Y, or Z, yeah.
Right, right.
So yeah, do we have anything anything else today that folks were hoping that we would get to, or any responses to what we've been talking about?
You know, Molly, this is Becky. I've had the exact opposite problem recently with people. Hmm. It's hard to rein them in. They talk so much. And and then next thing I know, I have 5 minutes to wrap things up, you know, and they've been telling me their whole story, and I've been so compassionate that they just keep telling me more. And and they have very complicated medical problems, and, you know, and they go into great detail. Mm-hmm. I could use some advice for that.
They're sort of reining people in, yeah.
Yeah.
I think at some point I wrote a tip on that. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it. I'll see if I can. What thoughts do you have so far, Becky?
I think I just need to be more time cognitive, if that's a word, a phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, and I've told them before, it's like, oh, we just have 15 minutes left, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of thing, but when it comes up. So
mm-hmm.
I do feel like it's important to get their whole story. And so I am pretty good at listening and eliciting and getting their information, but
mm-hmm.
I don't... We run out of time, and then I don't feel like I've helped them much.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
And that's frustrating probably for both of you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. They
people
listen to.
Yeah. Well, and clearly, Becky, you come across to them as someone who will listen. And, boy, that's valuable right there. And that may be indeed what they need at that point. And if they're coming back... then, you know, there's still more time. Excuse me.
Yes, yes.
And I'm hearing you're already doing the referring to time. And that, with some clients, can help focus them. They can go, oh, right, yeah, mm-hmm. The one thing I want to make sure to get from you today was, you know, and
that's
of course, what you want to hear. You want to hear that.
What's the most important thing that we can address?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and gosh, we've only got 10 minutes left. Are we talking about what you need and that kind of thing? You know, this is also one of those situations that I occasionally find an affirmation is useful. Because, for example, for people who have loads of energy and are telling you amazing things and, you know, and maybe if they're really good at giving you a medical history and it seems quite accurate and thorough, and, you know, so you could affirm something. You could say, wow,
okay,
you really get it, that all of this stuff is really, you know, plays in here, and you want to make sure that I get all this, you know, so that you first, as you're interrupting, right, you interrupt with an affirmation. You're like,
affirmation.
Wow,
okay.
You do have a lot going on in your life, or, you know, something like that. And I want to make sure we get to what you need today.
Okay, I like that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Well, thank you.
Well, mm-hmm. Speaking of time, I'm going to need to wind up in the next 2 or 3 minutes. Does anybody have any other quick things? It's been a fun, small little group.
Nothing for me. Very helpful.
Okay. Sure. Okay. And I'll get this recording down and send it out. So I think there are a lot of people who couldn't who may have gotten mixed up after I changed the time from tomorrow to today. I had something come up tomorrow. Anyway, well, this has been great. And I want to say to Kathleen, the one who's starting an internship soon, all the best to you. Good luck as you start your career.
Thank you.
Sure, sure. And I hope you've had a little bit of a window into what it's like being a dietitian working with people trying to make changes. So, okay. Well, thank you all for coming.
Yep. Thanks, Molly.
Sure.
Thank you,
Take
Molly.
Care.